Step 4. L is for liberation. It is far better for a man to go wrong in freedom than to go right in chains. Thomas H. Huxley, English biologist, known as Darwin's Bulldog. Chapter 12. Disappearing Act. How to Escape the Office. By working faithfully 8 hours a day, you may eventually get to be a boss and work 12 hours a day. Robert Frost, American poet and winner of 4 Pulitzer Prizes. On this path, it is only the first step that counts. Saint Jean-Baptiste Marie Vianney, Catholic saint, Curé des Arts. Palo Alto, California.
We're not going to expense the phone.
I'm not asking you to. Silence, then a nod, a laugh, and a crooked smile of resignation.
Okay, then. It's fine.
And that was that. Lickety-split. 44-year-old Dave Camarillo, lifelong employee, had cracked the code and started his second life. He hadn't been fired. He hadn't been yelled at. His boss seemed to be handling the whole situation quite well. Granted, Dave delivered the goods on the job, and it wasn't like he was doing naked snow angels in client meetings, but still, he had just spent 30 days in China without telling anyone. It wasn't half as hard as I thought it would be. Dave works among more than 10,000 employees at Hewlett-Packard, HP, and against all odds, he actually likes it. He has no desire to start his own company and has spent the last 7 years doing tech support for customers in 45 states and 22 countries. 6 months ago, however, he had a small problem. She measured 5'2" and weighed 110 pounds. Was he, like most men, afraid of commitment? Unwilling to stop running around the house in Spider-Man underoos or inseparable from the last refuge of any self-respecting man, the PlayStation? No, he was past all that. In fact, Dave was locked and loaded, ready to pop the big question, but he was short on vacation days and his girlfriend lived out of town. Way out of town. 5,913 miles out of town. He had met her on a client visit to Shenzhen, China, and it was now time to meet the parents, logistics be damned. Dave had only recently begun to take tech calls at home, and, well, isn't home where the heart is? One plane ticket and one T-Mobile GSM tri-band phone later, he was somewhere over the Pacific en route to his first 7-day experiment. 12 time zones hence, he proposed, she accepted, and no one was the wiser stateside. The second field trip was a 30-day tour of Chinese family and food. Pig face, anyone? Ending with Shumei Wu becoming Shumei Camarillo. Back in Palo Alto, HP continued its quest for world domination, neither knowing nor caring where Dave was. He had his calls forwarded to his newly begotten wife's cell phone, and all was right in the world. Now, back in the United States, after hoping for the best and preparing for the worst, Dave had earned his Eagle Scout mobility badge. The future looks flexible indeed. He is going to start by spending 2 months in China every summer and then move to Australia and Europe to make up for lost time, all with the full support of his boss. The key to cutting the leash was simple. He asked for forgiveness instead of permission. I didn't travel for 30 years of my life, so why not? That's precisely the question everybody should be asking. Why the hell not? From Cast to Castaway. The old rich, the upper class of yore with castles and ascots and irritating little lapdogs, are characterized as being well established in one place. The Schwartzes of Nantucket and the McDonald's of Charlottesville. Blech. Summers in the Hamptons is so 1990s. The guard is changing. Being bound to one place will be the new defining feature of middle class. The new rich are defined by a more elusive power than simple cash. Unrestricted mobility. This jet-setting is not limited to startup owners or freelancers. Employees can pull it off, too. If you're an entrepreneur, don't skip this chapter. This introduction to remote working tools and tactics is integral to the international pieces of the puzzle that follow.
Not only can they pull it off, but more and more companies want them to pull it off. Best Buy, the consumer electronics giant, is now sending thousands of employees home from their HQ in Minnesota and claims not only lowered costs, but also a 10 to 20% increase in results. The new mantra is this: work wherever and whenever you want, but get your work done. In Japan, a three-piece zombie who joins the 9-to-5 grind each morning is called a salaryman. And in the last few years, a new verb has emerged, datsu sarasuru, to escape datsu, the salaryman sara lifestyle. It's your turn to learn the datsu sara dance. This verb is used by Japanese women as well, even though female workers are referred to as OL, office ladies. Trading bosses for beer, an Oktoberfest case study. To create the proper leverage to be unshackled, we'll do two things: demonstrate the business benefit of remote working and make it too expensive or excruciating to refuse a request for it. Remember Sherwood? His French shirts are beginning to move and he is itching to ditch the United States for a global walkabout. He has more than enough cash now but needs to escape constant supervision in the office before he can implement all the time-saving tools from elimination and travel. He is a mechanical engineer and is producing twice as many designs in half the time since erasing 90% of his time wasters and interruptions. This quantum leap in performance has been noticed by his supervisors, and his value to the company has increased, making it more expensive to lose him. More value means more leverage for negotiations. Sherwood has been sure to hold back some of his productivity and efficiency so that he can highlight a sudden jump in both during a remote work trial period. Since eliminating most of his meetings and in-person discussions, he has naturally moved about 80% of all communication with his boss and colleagues to email, and the remaining 20% to phone. Not only this, but he has used tips from Chapter 7, Interrupting Interruption and the Art of Refusal, to cut unimportant and repetitive email volume in half. This will make the move to remote less noticeable, if at all noticeable from a managerial standpoint. Sherwood is running at full speed with less and less supervision. Sherwood implements his escape in 5 steps, beginning on July 12th during the slow business season and lasting 2 months, ending with a trip to Oktoberfest in Munich, Germany, for 2 weeks as a final test before bigger and bolder vagabonding plans. Step 1. Increase investment. First, he speaks with his boss on July 12th about additional training that might be available to employees. He proposes having the company pay for a 4-week industrial design class to help him better interface with clients, being sure to mention the benefits to the boss and business, i.e., he'll decrease intradepartmental back and forth and increase both client results and billable time. Sherwood wants the company to invest as much as possible in him so that the loss is greater if he quits. Step 2. Prove increased output off-sites. Second, he calls in sick the next Tuesday and Wednesday, July 18th and 19th, to showcase his remote working productivity. Any reason to be home will do: cable or phone installation, home repairs, etc. Or, if you prefer not to use a ruse, work a weekend or take 2 vacation days. He decides to call in sick between Tuesday and Thursday for 2 reasons. It looks less like a lie for a 3-day weekend, and it also enables him to see how well he functions in social isolation without the imminent reprieve of the weekend. He ensures that he doubles his work output on both days, leaves an email trail of some sort for his boss to notice, and keeps quantifiable records of what he accomplished for reference during later negotiations. Since he uses expensive CAD software that is only licensed on his office desktop, Sherwood installs a free trial of GoToMyPC remote access software so that he can pilot his office computer from home. Step 3. Prepare the quantifiable business benefit. Third, Sherwood creates a bullet point list of how much more he achieved outside the office with explanations. He realizes that he needs to present remote working as a good business decision and not a personal perk. The quantifiable end result was 3 more designs per day than his usual average and 3 total hours of additional billable client time. For explanations, he identifies removal of commute and fewer distractions from office noise. Step 4. Propose a revocable trial period. Fourth, fresh off completing the comfort challenge from previous chapters, Sherwood confidently proposes an innocent one-day-per-week remote work trial period for 2 weeks. He plans a script in advance, but does not make it a PowerPoint presentation or otherwise give it the appearance of something serious or irreversible. Sherwood knocks on his boss's office door around 3 p.m. on a relatively relaxed Thursday, July 27th, the week after his absence, and his script looks like the following. Stock phrases are underlined and footnotes explain negotiating points. Sherwood. Hi, Bill. Do you have a quick second?
Bill. Sure. What's up?
Sherwood. I just wanted to bounce an idea off of you that's been on my mind. 2 minutes should be plenty.
Bill. Okay. Shoot.
Sherwood. Last week, as you know, I was sick. Long story short, I decided to work at home despite feeling terrible. So, here's the funny part. I thought I would get nothing done, but ended up finishing 3 more designs than usual on both days. Plus, I put in 3 more billable hours than usual without the commute, office noise, distractions, etc. Okay, so here's where I'm going. Just as a trial, I'd like to propose working from home Mondays and Tuesdays for just 2 weeks. You can veto it whenever you want. And I'll come in if we need to do meetings. But I'd like to try it for just 2 weeks and review the results. I'm 100% confident that I'll get twice as much done. Does that seem reasonable?
Bill.
What if we need to share client designs?
Sherwood. There's a program called Go to My PC that I used to access the office computer when I was sick. I can view everything remotely, and I'll have my cell phone on me 24/7. So, what do you think? Test it out starting next Monday and see how much more I get done?
Do not digress from your goal. Once you've addressed an objection or concern, go for the close.
Bill.
Okay, fine, but it's just a test. I have a meeting in 5 and I have to run, but let's talk soon.
Sherwood. Great. Thanks for the time. I'll keep you posted on it all. I'm sure you'll be pleasantly surprised. Sherwood didn't expect to get 2 days per week approved. He asked for 2 so that, in the case his boss refused, he could ask for just 1 as a fallback position, bracketing. Why didn't Sherwood go for 5 days remote per week? 2 reasons. First, it's a lot for management to accept off the bat. We need to ask for an inch and turn it into a foot without setting off panic alarms. Second, it is a good idea to hone your remote working abilities. Rehearse a bit before shooting for the big time, as it decreases the likelihood of crises and screw-ups that will get remote rights revoked. Step 5. Expand remote time. Sherwood ensures that his days outside of the office are his most productive to date, even minimally dropping in-office production to heighten the contrast. He sets a meeting to discuss the results with his boss on August 15th and prepares a bullet point page detailing increased results and items completed compared to in-office time. He suggests upping the ante to 4 days per week remote for a 2-week trial, fully prepared to concede to 3 days if need be. Sherwood. It really turned out even better than I expected. If you look at the numbers, it makes a lot of business sense, and I'm enjoying work a lot more now. So, here we are. I'd like to suggest, if you think it makes sense, that I try 4 days a week for another 2-week trial. I was thinking that coming in Friday would make sense to prepare for the coming week, but we could do whichever day you prefer.
Friday is the best day to be in the office. People are relaxed and tend to leave early.
Bill.
Sherwood, I'm not really sure we can do that.
Sherwood, what's your main concern? Do not accept a vague refusal. Pinpointing the main concern in detail enables you to overcome it.
It seems like you're on your way out. Are you going to quit on us? Second, what if everyone wants to do the same?
Sherwood, fair enough. Good points. Don't jump to the defensive after an objection. Acknowledge the validity of a boss's concerns to prevent an ego-driven battle of wills. First, To be honest, I was close to quitting before, with all the interruptions and commute and whatnot, but I'm actually feeling great now with the change in routine.
Note this indirect threat dressed as a confession. It will make the boss think twice about refusing, but prevents the win-lose outcome of an ultimatum.
I'm doing more, and I feel relaxed for a change.
Second, no one should be allowed to work remotely unless they can show increased productivity, and I'm the perfect experiment. If they can show it, however, why not let them do it on a trial basis? It lowers costs for the office, increases productivity, and makes employees happier.
So what do you say? Can I test it out for 2 weeks and come in Fridays to take care of the office stuff? I'll still document everything, and you, of course, have the right to change your mind at any point.
Bill. Man, you are an insistent one. Okay, we'll give it a shot, but don't go blabbing about it.
Sherwood. Of course. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate the trust. Talk to you soon.
Sherwood continues to be productive at home and maintains his lower in-office performance. He reviews the results with his boss after 2 weeks and continues with 4 remote days per week for an additional 2 weeks until Tuesday, September 19th, when he requests a full-time remote trial of 2 weeks while he is visiting relatives out of state. This removes the boss's ability to call you to the office. This is critical for making the first jump overseas. Sherwood's team is in the middle of a project that requires his expertise, and he is prepared to quit if his boss refuses. He realizes that just as you want to negotiate ad pricing close to deadlines, getting what you want often depends more on when you ask for it than how you ask for it. Though he would prefer not to quit, his income from shirts is more than enough to fund his dreamlines of Oktoberfest and beyond. His boss acquiesces and Sherwood doesn't have to use his threat of quitting. He goes home that evening and buys a $524 round-trip ticket, less than 1 week's shirt sales, to Munich for Oktoberfest. Now he can implement all the time savers possible and hack out the inessentials. Somewhere between drinking wheat beer and dancing in lederhosen, Sherwood will get his work done in fine form, leaving his company better off than prior to 80-20, and leaving himself all the time in the world. But, hold on a second. What if your boss still refuses? Then they force your hand. If upper management won't see the light, you'll just have to use the next chapter to fire their asses. An alternative, the hourglass approach. It can be effective to take a longer period of absence up front in what some NR have termed the hourglass approach, so named because you use a long proof of concept up front to get a short remote agreement and then negotiate back up to full-time out of the office. Here's what it looks like. 1. Use a pre-planned project or emergency, family issue, personal issue, relocation, home repairs, whatever, that requires you to take 1 or 2 weeks out of the office. 2. Say that you recognize you can't just stop working and that you would prefer to work instead of taking vacation days. 3. Propose how you can work remotely and offer, if necessary, to take a pay cut for that period, and that period only, if performance isn't up to par upon returning. 4. Allow the boss to collaborate on how to do it so that he or she is invested in the process. 5. Make the 2 weeks off the most productive period you've ever had at work. 6. Show your boss the quantifiable results upon returning and tell him or her that, without all the distractions, commute, etc., you can get twice as much done. Suggest 2 or 3 days at home per week as a trial for 2 weeks. 7. Make those remote days ultra-productive. 8. Suggest only 1 or 2 days in the office per week. 9. Make those days the least productive of the week. 10. Suggest complete mobility. The boss will go for it. Q&A. Questions and Actions. Recently, I was asked if I was going to fire an employee who made a mistake that cost the company $600,000. No, I replied. I just spent $600,000 training him. Thomas J. Watson, founder of IBM. Liberty means responsibility. That is why most men dread it. George Bernard Shaw. While entrepreneurs have the most trouble with automation since they fear giving up control, employees get stuck on liberation because they fear taking control.
Resolve to grab the reins. The rest of your life depends on it. The following questions and actions will help you to replace presence-based work with performance-based freedom. 1. If you had a heart attack and, assuming your boss were sympathetic, how could you work remotely for 4 weeks? If you hit a brick wall with a task that doesn't seem remote compatible, or if you predict resistance from your boss, ask the following. What are you accomplishing with this task? What is the purpose? If you had to find other ways to accomplish the same, if your life depended on it, how would you do it? Remote conferencing? Video conferencing? Go-to meeting? Go to my PC or related software? Why would your boss resist remote work? What is the immediate negative effect it would have on the company, and what could you do to prevent or minimize it? 2. Put yourself in your boss's shoes. Based on your work history, would you trust yourself to work outside of the office? If you wouldn't, re-listen to elimination to improve production and consider the hourglass option. 3. Practice environment-free productivity. Attempt to work for 2 to 3 hours in a cafe for 2 Saturdays prior to proposing a remote trial. If you exercise in a gym, attempt to exercise for those 2 weeks at home, or otherwise outside of the gym environment. The purpose here is to separate your activities from a single environment and ensure that you have the discipline to work solo. 4. Quantify current productivity. If you have applied the 80-20 principle, set the rules of interrupting interruption, and completed related groundwork, your performance should be at an all-time high in quantifiable terms, whether customers served, revenue generated, pages produced, speed of accounts receivable, or otherwise. Document this. 5. Create an opportunity to demonstrate remote work productivity before asking for it as a policy. This is to test your ability to work outside of an office environment and rack up some proof that you can kick ass without constant supervision. 6. Practice the art of getting past no before proposing. Go to farmers markets to negotiate prices. Ask for free first-class upgrades. Ask for compensation if you encounter poor service in restaurants. And otherwise, ask for the world and practice using the following magic questions when people refuse to give it to you. What would I need to do to desired outcome? Under what circumstances would you desired outcome? Have you ever made an exception? I'm sure you've made an exception before, haven't you? If no for either of the last two, ask why not? If yes, ask why? 7. Put your employer on remote training wheels. Propose Monday or Friday at home. Consider doing this or the following step during a period when it would be too disruptive to fire you, even if you were marginally less productive while remote. If your employer refuses, it's time to get a new boss or become an entrepreneur. The job will never give you the requisite time freedom. If you decide to jump ship, consider letting them make you walk the plank. Quitting is often less appealing than tactfully getting fired and using severance or unemployment to take a long vacation. 8. Extend each successful trial period until you reach full-time or your desired level of mobility. Don't underestimate how much your company needs you. Perform well and ask for what you want. If you don't get it over time, leave. It's too big a world to spend most of life in a cubicle. Chapter 13. Beyond Repair. Killing Your Job. All courses of action are risky, so prudence is not in avoiding danger, it's impossible, but calculating risk and acting decisively. Make mistakes of ambition and not mistakes of sloth. Develop the strength to do bold things, not the strength to suffer. Niccolò Machiavelli, The Prince. Existential Pleas and Resignation's Mad Libs by Ed Murray. Dear preferred deity of choice, I realized something very adjective today as I was washing my animal, and that something is this. You are an adverb, cruel, personal expletive pronoun. Last night, after drinking 7 shots of least favorite hard liquor and snorting enough drug to make politician blush, it became clear it really is them and not me. I am the one who is completely
helpless state of being when it comes to the favorite color, personal relationships in my life, and yet I share my innermost type of candy with no one else on this adjective planet, because they are all, insulting adjective, extinct animals. I emotion them all, and I hope they meet a adjective demise, choking on a platter of their own Applebee's appetizer. This adjective catharsis made me feel smiley emotion, and strangely alone, simultaneously. How can I connect with these herd animals I am surrounded by on a daily basis? I am just so sick of, synonym for crying, in the part of your house every day. Maybe it would help if I shoved a fistful of vegetables into my bodily orifice. It makes my heart verb when I see the defeat in my parents' body parts, and it becomes adverb clear that they love the type of car more than sibling's name. Maybe I should stab my genitalia with a sharp object. Today I have decided to buy a noun which will serve as a metaphor and as a timeless adjective symbol for the expletive-faced servitude I am bound to in this life, no more in control than the most adjective-minded of farm animals. I am trying desperately to ST-P myself from active violent act, all of my co-workers, except person in the room. I've always wanted to forceful sexual act, him, her, it. I didn't ask to be verb. If reincarnation does exist, please leave me out of it. Some jobs are simply beyond repair. Improvements would be like adding a set of designer curtains to a jail cell. Better, but far from good. In the context of this chapter, job will refer to both a company, if you run one, and a normal job, if you have one. Some recommendations are limited to one of the two, but most are relevant to both. So, we begin. I have quit 3 jobs and been fired from all the rest. Getting fired, despite sometimes coming as a surprise and leaving you scrambling to recover, is often a godsend. Someone else makes the decision for you, and it's impossible to sit in the wrong job for the rest of your life. Most people aren't lucky enough to get fired and die a slow spiritual death over 30 to 40 years of tolerating the mediocre. Pride and punishment. If you must play, decide on 3 things at the start: the rules of the game, the stakes, and the quitting time. Chinese proverb. Just because something has been a lot of work or consumed a lot of time doesn't make it productive or worthwhile. Just because you are embarrassed to admit that you're still living the consequences of bad decisions made 5, 10, or 20 years ago shouldn't stop you from making good decisions now. If you let pride stop you, you will hate life 5, 10, and 20 years from now for the same reasons. I hate to be wrong and sat in a dead-end trajectory with my own company until I was forced to change directions or face total breakdown. I know how hard it is. Now that we're all on a level playing field, pride is stupid. Being able to quit things that don't work is integral to being a winner. Going into a project or job without defining when worthwhile becomes wasteful is like going into a casino without a cap on what you will gamble. Dangerous and foolish. But you don't understand my situation. It's complicated. But is it really? Don't confuse the complex with the difficult. Most situations are simple. Many are just emotionally difficult to act upon. The problem and the solution are usually obvious and simple. It's not that you don't know what to do. Of course you do. You are just terrified that you might end up worse off than you are now. I'll tell you right now, if you're at this point, you won't be worse off. Revisit fear setting and cut the cord. Like pulling off a band-aid, it's easier and less painful than you think. The average man is a conformist, accepting miseries and disasters with the stoicism of a cow standing in the rain. Colin Wilson, British author of The Outsider, New Existentialist. There are several principal phobias that keep people on sinking ships, and there are simple rebuttals for all of them. 1. Quitting is permanent. Far from it. Use the Q&A questions in this chapter and chapter 3, Fear Setting, to examine how you could pick up your chosen career track or start another company at a later point. I have never seen an example where a change of direction wasn't somehow reversible. 2. I won't be able to pay the bills. Sure you will. First of all, the objective will be to have a new job or source of cash flow before quitting your current job. Problem solved. If you jump ship or get fired, it isn't hard to eliminate most expenses temporarily and live on savings for a brief period. From renting out your home to refinancing or selling it, there are options. There are always options. It might be emotionally difficult, but you won't starve. Park your car in the garage and cancel insurance for a few months. Carpool or take the bus until you find the next gig. Rack up some more credit card debt and cook instead of eating out. Sell all the crap that you spent hundreds or thousands on and never use. Take a full inventory of your assets, cash reserves, debts, and monthly expenses. How long could you survive with your current resources or if you sold some assets? Go through all expenses and ask yourself, if I had to eliminate this because I needed an extra kidney, how would I do it? Don't be melodramatic when there is no need. Few things are fatal, particularly for smart people. If you've made it this far in life, losing or dropping a job will often be little more than a few weeks of vacation, unless you want more, prior to something better. 3. Health insurance and retirement accounts disappear if I quit. Untrue. I was scared of both when I was eliminated from TruSan. I had visions of rotting teeth and working at Walmart to survive. Upon looking at the facts and exploring options, I realized that I could have identical medical and dental coverage, the same provider and network, for $300 to $500 per month. To transfer my 401k to another company, I chose Fidelity Investments, was even easier. It took less than 30 minutes via phone and cost nothing. Covering both of these bases takes less time than getting a customer service rep on the phone to fix your electric bill. 4. It will ruin my resume. I love creative nonfiction. It is not at all difficult to sweep gaps under the rug and make uncommon items the very things that get job interviews. How? Do something interesting and make them jealous. If you quit and then sit on your ass, I wouldn't hire you either. On the other hand, if you have a 1 to 2 year world circumnavigation on your resume or training with professional soccer teams in Europe to your credit, two interesting things happen upon returning to the working world. First, you will get more interviews because you will stand out. Second, interviewers bored in their own jobs will spend the entire meeting asking how you did it. If there is any question of why you took a break or left your previous job, there is one answer that cannot be countered. I had a once-in-a-lifetime chance to do exotic and envy-producing experience, and I couldn't turn it down. I figured that with 20 to 40 years of work to go, what's the rush? The Cheesecake Factor. Would you like me to give you a formula for success? It's quite simple, really. Double your rate of failure. Thomas J. Watson, founder of IBM. Summer, 1999. Even before I tasted it, I knew something wasn't quite right. After 8 hours in the refrigerator, this cheesecake still hadn't set at all. It swished in the gallon bowl like a viscous soup, chunks shifting and bobbing as I tilted it under close inspection. Somewhere, a mistake had been made. It could have been any number of things. 3 1-pound sticks of Philly cream cheese, eggs, stevia, unflavored gelatin, vanilla, sour cream. In this case, it was probably a combination of things and the lack of a few simple ingredients that generally make a cheesecake a form of cake. I was on a no-carbohydrate diet, and I had used this recipe before. It had been so delicious that my roommates wanted their fair share and insisted on an attempt at bulk production. Hence began the mathematical shenanigans and problems. Before Splenda and other miracles of sugar imitation came on the scene, the hardcore used stevia, an herb 300 times sweeter than sugar. One drop was like 300 packets of sugar. It was a delicate tool, and I wasn't a delicate cook. I had once made a small handful of cookies using baking soda instead of baking powder, and that was bad enough to drive my roommates to puke on the lawn. This new masterpiece made the cookies look like fine dining. It tasted like liquid cream cheese mixed with cold water and about 600 packets of sugar. I then did what any normal and rational person would do. I grabbed the largest soup ladle with a sigh and sat down in front of the TV to face my punishment.
I had wasted an entire Sunday and a boatload of ingredients. It was time to reap what I had sown. 1 hour and 20 large spoonfuls later, I hadn't made a dent in the enormous batch of soup, but I was down for the count. Not only could I not eat anything but soup for 2 days, I couldn't bring myself to even look at cheesecake, previously my favorite dessert, for more than 4 years. Stupid? Of course. It's about as stupid as one can get. This is a ridiculous and micro example of what people do on a larger scale with jobs all the time. Self-imposed suffering that can be avoided. Sure, I learned a lesson and paid for the mistake. The real question is, for what? There are two types of mistakes. Mistakes of ambition and mistakes of sloth. The first is a result of a decision to act, to do something. This type of mistake is made with incomplete information, as it's impossible to have all the facts beforehand. This is to be encouraged. Fortune favors the bold. The second is the result of a decision of sloth, to not do something, wherein we refuse to change a bad situation out of fear despite having all the facts. This is how learning experiences become terminal punishments, bad relationships become bad marriages, and poor job choices become lifelong prison sentences. Yeah, but what if I'm in an industry where jumping around is looked down upon? I've been here barely a year, and prospective employers would think, would they? Test assumptions before condemning yourself to more misery. I've seen one determinant of sex appeal to good employers, performance. If you are a rock star when it comes to results, it doesn't matter if you jump ship from a bad company after 3 weeks. On the other hand, if tolerating a punishing work environment for years at a time is a prerequisite for promotion in your field, could it be that you're in a game not worth winning? The consequences of bad decisions do not get better with age. What cheesecake are you eating? Q&A. Questions and Actions. Only those who are asleep make no mistakes. Ingvar Kamprad, founder of IKEA, world's largest furniture brand. Tens of thousands of people, most of them less capable than you, leave their jobs every day. It's neither uncommon nor fatal. Here are a few exercises to help you realize just how natural job changes are and how simple the transition can be. 1. First, a familiar reality check. Are you more likely to find what you want in your current job or somewhere else? 2. If you were fired from your job today, what would you do to get things under financial control? 3. Take a sick day and post your resume on the major job sites. Even if you have no immediate plans to leave your job, post your resume on sites such as www.monster.com and www.careerbuilder.com, using a pseudonym if you prefer. This will show you that there are options besides your current place of work. Call headhunters if your level makes such a step appropriate, and send a brief email such as the one below to friends and non-work contacts. Dear all, I am considering making a career move and am interested in all opportunities that might come to mind. Nothing is too outrageous or out of left field. If you know what you want or don't want on some level, feel free to add, "I'm particularly interested in," or "I would like to avoid." Please let me know if anything comes to mind. Tim. Call in sick or take a vacation day to complete all of these exercises during a normal 9-to-5 workday. This will simulate unemployment and lessen the fear factor of non-office limbo. In the world of action and negotiation, there is one principle that governs all others. The person who has more options has more power. Don't wait until you need options to search for them. Take a sneak peek at the future now, and it will make both action and being assertive easier. 4. If you run or own a company, imagine that you have just been sued and must declare bankruptcy. The company is now insolvent and you must close up shop. This is something you must legally do, and there are no finances to entertain other options. How would you survive? Tools and Tricks. Making the decision easier. I Work with Fools. www.iworkwithfools.com. Work with Fools allows you to read or anonymously share work-related stories about the foolish co-workers and bosses most of us deal with daily. Pulling the Trigger Together. I Resign. www.i-resign.com. This site provides everything from Second Life job hunting advice to, my personal favorite, sample resignation letters. Don't miss the helpful discussion forums and hysterical web consultant from London letter. Opening retirement accounts. If you want an advisor and don't mind some fees, consider the following. Franklin Templeton, www.franklintempleton.com, 800-527-2020. American Funds, www.americanfunds.com, 800-421-0180. If you will do your own investing and want no-load funds, check out these companies. Fidelity Investments, www.fidelity.com, 800-343-3548. Vanguard, www.vanguard.com, 800-414-1321. Health insurance for self-employed or unemployed. More options and recommendations can be found on www.4hourworkweek.com. E-Health Insurance, www.ehealthinsurance.com, 800-977-8860. Aetna, www.aetna.com. Kaiser Permanente, www.kaiserpermanente.org, 800-207-5084.